You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey! Welcome to HR Bandit and to episode 14. This is your host Ankita, and I'm so glad you're here for what can only be called our best one yet. If this is your first time, welcome to the show. If this is you returning, you know what I'm going to say, but let's say it anyway. A big hug to you. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, it feels like a lot has been happening in the world recently. An increasing uptick in violence, introduction of regressive laws, and more. It was hard to pick just three topics for this episode, but it had to be done. So without ado, our three topics for the day. First up, Roe versus Wade. A lot has been said about this, but not enough. So we'll say it right here. For our second topic, corporate hypocrisy. Now, we're increasingly seeing organizations do one thing and then say something else. Do we call it out and how? For our third and final topic, allyship. Now, this is a word that's been increasingly used in the workplace, but what does it really mean to be an ally? Three topics that I'm really looking forward to discuss. But the best part of the show, say it with me, Bandits, is our guest for the day. I'm so pleased to introduce you to Yetunde Hoffman. Yetunde is the founder of Solaris, a global executive leadership program targeted at the Black women executive and professional in organizations. She's a portfolio non-executive director. She sits on the board of Cranswick PLC, a FTSE 250 leading UK food producer, and Treat PLC, a global ingredients manufacturer with operations in UK, USA, and China, and chairs their remuneration committee. She's also a trustee of the Institute of Business Ethics. She's a visiting fellow at Henley Business School, a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts, a TEDx speaker, and a classical pianist. That I didn't know. Yetunde is a board-level executive leadership coach and mentor. She is the managing director of Synchrony Development Consulting, an international leadership and change advisory practice, and of the Enjoyable Life series CIC, an organization designed to enable people of all walks of life to be empowered to live their lives more enjoyably. Finally, she is the author of Beyond Engagement, a book that's on my reading list. And I could go on, like there's an endless list of achievements, but I have to stop somewhere. Yetunde, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Oh, Ankita, I'm great. Thank you so much for that awesome welcome. I'm doing really well, and I'm excited to meet you, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Oh, so am I. But we have three heavy topics for the day. And before I get into it, I have to ask you, what's your favorite drink? Alcoholic, non-alcoholic, pick anything except water. And I ask because before I moved to Dublin, had you ever said, am I a tea or coffee person? I would have said tea. Mm-hmm. Now it's 11 a.m. I finished my second cup of coffee before I got onto this call. So I no longer know what my beverage of choice is, but I'm really curious to learn more about yours.
Well, Ankita, I'm going to cheat and give you two. So the first, I love tea. I can have about 10 cups of tea a day. I really love tea, very sweet tea. And what I absolutely love is a Prosecco with a dash of elderflower cordial inside of it. It just makes it sweeter. I love it.
Oh, well, I'm already dreaming of Prosecco. I actually have a bottle of Prosecco in the fridge right now.
But if you try it with a little bit of elderflower cordial or like a concentrated elderflower, and you mix it in, it's so beautiful and refreshing. You just have to be careful that you don't drink too much because it tastes so nice. You'll forget it's got alcohol in it.
I have to try that. Okay. So I have something to add to the cart. Okay. With that, I am going to move on to our first topic of the day.
Okay.
On June 24th, 2022, the Supreme Court overruled Roe in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. The Constitution does not confer a right to abortion, wrote Samuel Alito, one of the more conservative judges. He wrote, Roe and Casey are overruled, and the authority to regulate abortion is returned to the people and their elected representatives. Now, this ruling had an instant and devastating impact on people seeking abortions, forcing them to travel long distances to get the care they need or carry an unwanted pregnancy to term. A lot has happened between then and now. I could go into a lot of detail, but a few things. A number of organizations responded to the decision by offering to pay travel expenses for employees who will now need to travel to access reproductive health in other states. A lot of organizations also came out to publicly express disappointment in the ruling. Jeremy Stoppelman, CEO of Yelp, says in a Fast Company article that remaining silent on abortion flies in the face of any public commitment to diversity and equity. I could not agree more. Yet today, I'm really curious about your thoughts on this one, and are organizations doing enough?
Oh, thank you, Ankita. This is one of those situations where I say it's very difficult for me to call out individual organizations. And the reason why is this, because as human beings, and we all are human, it's so important to address things on a case-by-case basis. And I think that organizations have got to listen to their people and consult their workforce, because it's one of those things where if you take one perspective, you're opposing another. It doesn't matter. And so I think this is where organizations have to rise above what's going on politically, what various political parties might be choosing to do, and genuinely listen to their people. Because you cannot walk in the skin of somebody who's making the choice to do whatever they want to do. What you can do is listen and say, what is the best way to support you? And that might vary from one organization to another. Now, a business and a good organizational leadership that doesn't pay attention to the needs of their people and genuinely communicate with them, now that's an organization that should be held to account.
What kind of communication would you say would be appropriate in this situation, right?
Like,
should there be a broad-based announcement? So like organizations that came publicly and expressed disappointment with the ruling or said, this is surprising, I wasn't expecting this, but we are here to support you as you need. What is this communication enough, or should there have been more?
Well, I think that communication has got to happen at multiple levels, because I sometimes am skeptical about businesses that go out, you know, they have big announcements internally and externally, and then when you lift the bonnet, they've done nothing. So I believe it's got to be multi-pronged. And the most important communicator is the line manager of the individual. What I would love to see are organizations equipping the team leaders with information that they can gather their people together and say, you've heard this, don't know how you might be affected. You know, it's not our job to tell you how to rule your life, but this is what we have available. We have this type, we've got counseling, we've got this, we've got that, whatever there might be, so that we can meet your needs. And we've got to remember that organizations are diverse, Ankita. You know, all sorts of thoughts. There'll be those different faiths, different backgrounds, different orientations, different ethnicity groups. And therefore, a business's role is to walk and operate in such a way that all of their people, without exception, feels like they belong, feels like they have a voice, feels like they can say what they want without censure, without being shut down, and also that their needs are being met. So that line manager or that team leader must have the tools and the information to communicate one-to-one and in small groups with their people. That's critical. Now, if a business decides that what they also want to do is send out a big message out there to the government, that's okay. But the thing is, if you send out a big message, you will be watched. People are going to hold you accountable, and you better walk your talk, because sometimes this is what breaks down trust. Businesses say all they can to the press. They go out there, they use it as a big PR event, and the people that really need their support internally are not listened to. So I believe there's nothing wrong with doing that. What you must do is ensure that the line manager that has the close contact with their people has got to be ready to listen and equip them with the ability to do so.
I love how you brought in part of our, like, flavors of our second topic into this, because they do go hand in hand. But I'm going to press you a little further on this before we move to corporate hypocrisy.
Of course.
Now, I think employees are increasingly expecting organizations to take a stand on issues, right? Now, I'm going to cast the net a little wider, and we could argue that taking a stand on Roe versus Wade was easier, but there are more complicated problems on which we expect organizations to take a stand. It could be things like same-sex marriage that we discussed the last time we spoke. It could be Russia versus Ukraine, and now Taiwan versus China. And they're expecting organizations to take a stand, because I think at this point of time, some organizations are almost as powerful as governments, right? So what do you think are issues that organizations should take a strong stand on? And what are issues that organizations should stay out of? So for example, Russia versus Ukraine, some organizations needed to take a stand and said, we're pulling out of Russia, right? A huge number of organizations did that. Now, one could say, stay neutral. We have Russians and Ukrainians both in our workforce. Like, why are you doing this? And so on. So, like, I'm really curious what you think about, you know, positions that where organizations should take a stand and places where they should stay out of.
You know what, Ankita, it very much depends on, I don't know, it's maybe the philosophy of the CEO or the top team or the board. I think when it comes to aspects of war, it's not just the stand that you take, but the how in which you behave. So quite a few organizations pulled out of Russia because of the war, the invasion of Ukraine. Now, you also have Russians, day-to-day people who have nothing to do with the decision their government made, that are struggling to look after their families, that are trying to put food on the table. What are they going to do with their jobs? So organizations can take a stance and say, we're going to come out of Russia, but what's the impact on these people? Every time you take a stance, you must think about the consequences of the decisions that you make, both positive and negative, and what can be done to minimize the negative impact. So, I mean, personally, I thought, yes, a good thing that organizations were pulling out of Russia. And then I think of, I've got friends in Russia who are looking at, well, what am I going to do about a job? I didn't agree with my government invading Ukraine, but now I have to pick up the pieces. And the ones that are making the decisions have no consequence at all. So I think it's not the what, but the how. Organizations that pull out, what are you putting in place to ensure that those who are losing their jobs by the reasons of you pulling out are being taken care of? That's really, really key. So they should take a stance. They should take a stance on things like that, on aspects of invasion. When it comes to personal choices of individuals, I don't believe organizations should take a stand one way or another. And this is the reason why. At the very basic aspect, taking one view opposes another. So what I believe the stance that organizations should take is a stance of inclusion, a stance of everybody counts, and provide, just like you would do a CRM for different customers and clients, provide the needs, the resources, the environment that every single person, regardless of their background, whether they want to be their background, their sexual orientation, their faith, their race, their ethnicity, their culture, whatever it might be, provide an environment where they feel like they can belong. So it depends. Now, if an organization says, well, sorry, we're not going to hire immigrants, that for me is a stance that's a load of nonsense. Why are you? Because you made a very good point, Ankita. Some organizations are very powerful. And in fact, my personal belief is that the keys to change in the world, in society, lies in the hand of organization, not in the hands of government. So that I agree with you. And this is why the role of organizational leaders is one that's critical. And nobody should be aspiring to be a senior leader structurally, because I believe we all are leaders, by the way, but structurally be a leader at an organizational senior level if you're not prepared to act and make decisions in the interest of the greater good and of a higher purpose.
I think that's really fascinating because traditionally we've thought of CEOs as people who are responsible for running the business, ensuring that there is profit, but without causing great harm. But I don't think they ever looked at their roles as, you know, being as responsible as governments at some point of time. But it is. And I'm going to use that to move into our second topic, which is of corporate hypocrisy. And especially because recently, the CEO of Patagonia, Ryan Gellert, called out corporate hypocrisy on climate change in an article on LinkedIn. Right now, there was a new act that just got approved, and it will most likely become law. And they've called it the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. But it is, like, if you lift the layers, it is about climate change. So they are encouraging people to plug in, use electric, move away from fossil fuel, and so on. So they're highly incentivizing that, right? So it's technically a climate tax and healthcare package. Now, both the US Chamber of Commerce and the Business Roundtable, which is a group of almost 200 CEOs from companies such as Apple, Walmart, GM, who've all publicly said that we want to address societal concern, we want to, you know, work towards climate action. They've all been against it, right? So climate change is an easy one, right? But like here, I would say organizations need to take a stand. All employees are looking at you. But then there might be a huge bunch of employees who think climate change is fake. Like all of it is propaganda. It's a way to actually take away money from organizations. Like, so as a CEO, should I be like, oh, I'm going to be inclusive. I'm going to do actions which like appease those who believe in climate change, appease those who don't believe in climate change? Like, what does one do?
That's so funny, because a lot of times I think what the general public and people in society generally need to understand a bit more. We need to be educated about the impact of climate change. And I'm so grateful about the social development goals. I'm really grateful for COP26 because it's raised awareness, and you have various networking organizations now focused at the impact of climate change. But I think there's still a lot more to do, because, I mean, I could be driving on the motorway and you look out of the window and there's plastic bottles, waste, people dumping, fly tipping mattresses on the sides of the road. And Keita, it's terrible. So the world, human beings in general, one, need educating, two, need to appreciate that we all have a role to play in protecting our climate. It's not just pointing our fingers at the supermarkets and saying, when are you going to, you know, stop producing plastic and so on. So there's that work to be done. One, and secondly, Ryan Gillett is right. You do have organizations that will say one thing and do another because it sounds great. And one of the places in which businesses find themselves being caught short is in the areas of race, diversity, and inclusion, particularly when it comes, oh, yes, we want to see more women in senior management. We want to see more Black people in senior management. Yeah, JP Morgan was one of those about wanting to have senior women. And then I think a few months ago, there was something in the press about they're losing their women at the most senior levels. And then BlackRock, that writes to all the companies they invest in to say, we want to see you do better, even they've been called to account about how they treat. So I think with BlackRock, last year, there was an article in Institutional Investor that says, hey, we're going to take you to court for discrimination and harassment. We're accusing you of that. So a lot of these organizations need to do work in their back office. They need to do work in their backyard. They've got to look at themselves and be really honest. And Keita, Rome was never built in a day, and nobody's saying that you've got to suddenly go from A to Z in 5 days. No. What you can do is make sure that the steps that you take are real, they're long-lasting, they're genuine, you mean it, you're ready to put your money where your mouth is, and you're willing to hold your hand up and say, listen, I haven't always got it right. That's all the world needs. Honesty on behalf of these leaders, not see how good I am. Because when you make false claims, actually what it is indirectly looking to make more money. When you make a false claim, you want to be seen as attractive so people can come. No, make a real claim and let people be the judge of it. Make an authentic claim and be willing to be counted.
So you have to be a good citizen and do your bit for the community. Perfect.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
With that, I'm going to move into our last topic for the pod today.
Okay.
And today I want to talk about allyship, right?
Yes.
It's a trending topic. I think almost every organization I know of has like some program or some training to do around, you know, say you're an ally, sign up as an ally.
Yes.
What does it mean to be an ally?
You know, and for me, allyship even transcends race. It could a Black person could be an ally to another Black person. And what it really means is that I want to come alongside you and have you win. And whatever opportunities and access I have, because of the privileges I have, the doors I can open, the influence I have, my ability to advocate, I will lend them to you and use them to actively and proactively ensure that you win. That's what allyship is. And it's for me, it's one of a genuine ally is a person who loves. It's a feature of love-based leadership. And so even talking with you, the things that you say when people come on your podcast, what you say about them, that's a feature of allyship. It's been an advocate and encouragement. And it's not just in front of the person, but also when the person isn't in the room. How are you ensuring that their case is heard? How are you ensuring that they're being considered? If you take it in the world of work, for example, Ankita, it's saying, when the person's not in the room, it's like being a sponsor, an active sponsor, and saying, I am here. I'm not just going to, you know, just because it's going to help my career to speak up. No, because it matters. We both are human. For some reason, maybe you're not being at the advantage that you need to be at. And therefore, I am going to help you. I'm going to walk alongside you. I will lock arms with you so that you can win. And because you win, others like you and even me will win too.
Yeah. Allyship is hard because it requires you to do things that you may be uncomfortable about. Like I was reading the book called So You Want to Talk About Race. I haven't gotten far into it. I know it was written in 2018, way before, you know, the resurgence of the... And so here are some of the chapters, right? And it is so... Like, that's what attracted me to the book because I was like, oh, why am I always being told to check my privilege, right? How can I talk about affirmative action? Why can't I say the N-word? Why can't I touch your hair? Like, things like these. And I was like, I have gotten into so many discussions about affirmative action, positive discrimination, meritocracy, and things like that, where you come across these very strong opposite forces. And it's so much easier to just let the conversation be than to fight it and have a long drawn debate or have conversations about things that are genuinely uncomfortable.
Yes.
Right? I was a strong believer in meritocracy for a very, very long time, for more than like 90% of my life. And then I had this check where I realized that meritocracy is something reserved for the privileged.
Yeah.
But I have had so many discussions where I failed to make the other person understand. And then I'm like, Am I being a good ally if I drop the conversation? Am I being a good ally if I point out discrimination, even at the cost of me losing my job, offending some people? Like, why is allyship so important? Like, why can't I just let these conversations lie and let someone else pick it up on behalf of me?
I think this is where the power of storytelling always comes into play, because it's so you can have, as a Black woman myself, somebody can say, can I touch your hair? One person can say, can I touch your hair? And I'd say, no problem. Another person can say, can I touch your hair? And I'll say, no, because I believe this person is being racist. How do I determine that? Sometimes it's about knowing the individual, and both of them could be white. It always depends. I think that the key thing here is about wisdom, absolute wisdom, and being responding in the moment rather than reacting. Because allyship is hard, but it is needed. There was a time many, 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 many years ago, in fact, I would say in the days of my own naivety, when I was, I believe in meritocracy. I think that's a load of crappy. Can I say that on the, and in fact, if people said, Yetunde, should there be quotas? I'd say, yes, why not? For a short period of time. You know why? Because if something is important enough, we would do it. And I've never seen turkeys vote for Christmas. Never. And when people talk about meritocracy, they talk about, hey, picking the best person for the job, promoting the right person. When they are successful, when you're the one person having to do 20 times the same thing to even be recognized, and when I hear those kinds of stories, then I can understand why you've got affirmative action in the United States, which, by the way, there's been, I don't know whether you read about it, I think a percentage of the, I can't remember, has just come out in the press recently, where a percentage of the Fortune 500 companies and so on have voted to continue with affirmative action. And I thought, well done, well done. Yeah. Because there has to be change. Talk to the South Africans. Why do they have the positive quota system? Because you need it. And even in the world of work, what do we hear? If you treasure it, you'll measure it. If you measure it, you'll treasure it. Why do we have targets to drive goals? Why do boards hold businesses accountable for the delivery of their strategy? Why do they say we want to grow by X percent, EPS growth by that, turnover by that percentage? And yet when it comes to things to do with human beings, the most critical resource in your organization, well, we don't want to have meritocracy. It's our people. So it is difficult, but it's a place that we have to go to if we're going to make change. And allies have got to be ready to say, well, what does it mean? What sacrifices am I willing to make? Am I going to take one for the team so that things can change? And how do I get the support? It really is important. Yes, it is. There's more that needs to be done, and done faster by all of us. Got to be bolder. But I tell you something, Ankita, with something that underpins it all, with love. There's no, everybody in my belief is trying to do the best they can. And making a person feel awful because of what they say or do, that's not what I want to do. But if the byproduct is that for a short time, well, maybe. Because the intention is to bring change. The intention is to have people be the best they can. The intention is to say, it's enough. If we both are human, let's be aware of how you're doing this, what it takes, what can we both do to ensure we all can win. And that's love. And it goes beyond inclusion. It goes beyond diversity. Yeah. It says we both are human. And we both have a right to life. We both have a right to this organization. And if you, for some reason of society, have more than I have, or vice versa, then it's time to share. Now it's time to lower the drawbridge. Time to lend a hand, because one day I might be doing the same for you.
Oh, 100%. I think allyship is important, and it's an endless journey, because I learn something every single day. And I'm like, I've been doing this wrong all along. But yeah, so much for intense discussions.
I could say, you're probably thinking, what else? I mean, I could talk about this topic.
Oh, yeah.
hours, because it's complex. Why? Because as human beings, we naturally are complex. And people say they are allies for different reasons. You know, in the world of business, you talk about reverse mentoring. It's a form of allyship. And people do, we come with different intentions. A key thing always for all of us as human beings and anybody who aspires to be an ally is to check yourself and say, what's my intention? Is that because I want to become more famous? Do I want to grow my career? Or do I genuinely want to help? And that will influence the degree to which you stick your neck out, how much heat you're willing to take in that kitchen when you're speaking up and all your colleagues are looking at you like saying, where did you come from? Why are you speaking up? Yeah, you shouldn't. Once you know your why, without looking left, you know, there's a book called Slaying Your Lane. Once you know your why, you're not worried about anybody else coming to influence you and you're sticking to it, then you'll have the courage to be bold. And Ankisa, going back to what you said in the beginning, and if that means the sacrifice is ultimately losing your job, then that organization didn't deserve you in the first place.
Yeah.
They didn't deserve you.
Whew. Okay. I'm gonna attempt. I need to pull us out of here, and I'm gonna attempt to do that.
Okay.
Before you go, a few things. A, let's lighten the mood. Is there a favorite joke that you want to share?
I'm not very good at jokes. I know one joke which is very dirty, so I'm not going to share that.
No.
Although it's very funny, but I'm not going to.
No.
I'm not going to share that. But the joke I will tell is this one. I always say, so apologies to anybody I know who might be listening to this podcast, because you'll say, oh, okay, here she goes again. It's a day. It's okay. So can I tell two?
As many as you want.
So what did the big tomato say to the small tomato as they were running? What did the big tomato say to the small tomato as they were running?
I want to say, excuse me.
Catch up.
Oh.
I think I'll stick with that one. Catch up.
That's a good one.
What's like, yours? Come on, you gotta say yours too.
Okay, I cheated and I asked my little device to tell me one. Now, if I take her name, she'll start beeping. So But I am terrible with jokes. I literally am not the funny person ever. But here goes. I know a Lyft operator. He says his job has its ups and downs. So if
I've added that to my list too.
Oh God. Also, Yetunde, you and I are meeting in December, aren't we?
Yes. Friday the 9th of December.
Yes. Do you want to tell us a little more about the event?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things I do is I have a not-for-profit organization called the Enjoyable Life Series. And the purpose of the organization is to enable men and women of all walks of life to be empowered to drive, to live their lives more enjoyably. And one of the ways we do this is through the power of storytelling. And we raise money also through this conference for charities, two beautiful charities. So it's called What's Your Story? What's Your Story is a storytelling conference basically where you have diverse people, all 12 awesome storytellers come and tell a story from a place of what they do and from a place of who they are, not what they do or what they have. And they answer questions like, you know, how do you recover from adversity? How do you recover from a setback? How do I get over the apology I never had? What's my purpose? Do I change career now or later? Do I forgive? What do I do if I'm stuck? And so many others. It's a diverse conference. You have people from all walks of life there, backgrounds, it's so beautiful. It's on Friday the 9th of December in London from 9 a.m. to 5:30. Come along, buy a ticket, come and be encouraged as you're coming to the end of the year, and also make some fresh and diverse connections.
I love it. I am looking forward to it. So Bandits, if you're in London, or even if you're willing to travel, I'll see you there on 9th December. It was an absolute pleasure speaking to you. This is not only our best one yet, but when I look at the time, it's also our longest one yet.
I know. And Kita, just if you can say to the audience, they can find out more by going to my website, yetunewolfman.com. They can find out more about the conference there. Yeah.
Yeah. Or links to everything we've spoken about in the show notes. If you've missed out, all the articles, how to get in touch with Yetunde, more about the conference. But folks, if you're in London, make your way to the conference and I'll see you there. Until then, on behalf of Yetunde, NHRDN and myself, we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.